and welcome to The Debate. I'm Kavita Akwaye. The Syrian conflict erupted in March of 2011, and soon after, it escalated into an armed insurgency backed by the United States and its allies, including regional countries like Saudi Arabia and Qatar. A rising death toll, reports of atrocities by the insurgents, suspicions that chemical arms to have been used, and a dual approach, in particular by the UK and US, calling for a Geneva-style conference later this month, yet throwing more aid to the insurgents on the ground. Not to mention the Israeli threat of yet another attack should Assad fall. Just some of the topics we're going to try to squeeze in this edition of The Debate.
The Syrian army has concluded the first phase of its operations in Qusair. It says it's recaptured over 50% of the city. The strategic city lies between the Syrian city of Homs and Tripoli in northern Lebanon. The second phase involves securing the northern quarter of the town as it's still occupied by insurgents.
This point overlooks many key buildings in the city. The mass party building, state security post, and military post. And it directly overlooks the northern quarter, which is the center of insurgents' presence since the beginning of the unrest in Syria.
The foreign-backed opposition has called on its units on the ground to do whatever they could to retake control of Qusair.
Every brigade in Aleppo and Raqqa and Idlib and Deir al-Zor and Damascus should send a unit, however small, immediately to help Homs. And everyone who has weapons or ammunition should send them to Qusair and Homs to strengthen its resistance.
The so-called Friends of Syria group, which includes the U.S., its Arab allies and Turkey, has renewed its call for a regime change in Damascus. In a meeting in Jordan's capital, Amman, the group said Syrian President Bashar al-Assad cannot play a role in the country's future, ignoring the fact that it's a decision that the Syrian people should make. This comes ahead of an international peace conference on Syria that organizers, including Russia, want to hold in Geneva next month. Moscow has reiterated that Iran must be present at the conference. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has said that the foreign-backed Syrian opposition is not committed to peace talks. Russia and the U.S. have agreed to bring the opposition and the Syrian government, along with participants from the international community, to the negotiating table to end the crisis in Syria. A group of opposition parties inside Syria called the National Democratic Bloc has welcomed the upcoming conference. The Syrian government has also welcomed it, but it says it needs more details before deciding whether to attend. However, the U.S. and its allies are acting in ways that may spoil the meeting. Britain's foreign secretary has said that London is seeking to lift a ban on providing weapons to the militants fighting President Bashar al-Assad. The U.S. has already taken similar measures, passing a bill which allows for arming the militants in Syria. And now the head of the foreign-backed militants fighting the Syrian government says his forces have already received 35 tons of arms from Saudi Arabia. He added that he will not attend the upcoming international peace conference unless the U.S. and its allies give the militants advanced anti-tank and anti-aircraft weapons. Idris said the militants on the ground are weak, and it will not be fruitful for them to enter into peace talks while they are losing ground. He also previously asked Washington for 700 tons of weapons each week over the next month. Syria has been gripped by turmoil for over 2 years. Also, on the political front, Iran is set to hold a third international conference on Syria by the end of this month, focusing on ways to resolve the country's crisis peacefully. The conference will take place before the peace conference in Geneva. With the peace talks in Geneva around the corner, the world awaits to see if there is any light at the end of the tunnel for Syria. But the stance adopted by the so-called Friends of Syria in Amman seems to be directed at derailing the conference as the group continues to insist that President Assad should step down.
Yes, so many developments there that we have to cover, and hopefully we can. In this edition of The Debate, let's get it going. Let me introduce our guest first. Political commentator Sukant Shandan joins us from London. We have Middle East affairs expert Jihad Murakata, who joins us from Beirut. Gentlemen, welcome. Sukant Shandan, let me start with you. Before we get started, actually, the slaying of this British soldier in London, I'd like to get your comments on that. The Prime Minister, David Cameron, he said, "We won't give in to terror." He called it a horrendous act. I mean, this has happened in Syria by these very same insurgents that the UK is backing. Quick question, why aren't those killings as big a deal as what has occurred in London?
Good evening, brother, and to all your viewers. A good question. It's interesting, and there's an increasingly popular picture going around some social networks at the moment, where it has two pictures of William Hague. One where he's saying he opposes Al-Qaeda in London, and the second half of the picture is a picture of him saying, but I support Al-Qaeda in Syria. So really what we're seeing is an event coming full circle from which Al-Qaeda was given birth by the British, the United States, and their Gulf allies in achieving their strategic aims in Afghanistan in the 80s. And they've essentially been using Al-Qaeda in two ways. One, using them to create division, trauma, destabilization, and regime change against countries and regions that they want to do that to. And secondly, promoting them as promoting them as the enemy. So in order to honey trap a lot of our young men, especially in thinking that this is some movement against the West when it isn't, and in so doing, criminalizing vast swathes of the Muslim community, and so softening them up for repression and manipulation as well. So we have a very interesting hypocritical stance, but it's not hypocrisy. This is the nature of the powers that we're facing, that they're going to manipulate things as well. And what really should have opened everyone's minds and eyes up into the relationship between Britain, especially, and the so-called Al-Qaeda, or this form of violent Takfiri movement, was Libya first, when they used historical allies with Al-Qaeda, particularly the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group, as the main component part of the death squad movement in Libya to conduct regime change there. Mr. Belhaj in Tripoli was the leading death squad leader in Libya. Some people foolishly think that he's some kind of human rights case. He's not. He's comparable to the loyalist death squads in Northern Ireland, the Contras in Latin America. So first was Libya, and then it's all come totally out in the open with Syria, which we're seeing this real alliance of devilish forces. On the one hand, these violently, profoundly sectarian lunatics of so-called Al-Qaeda, right through to liberal and left-leaning forces in the West, who are all allied together, railed against the Syrian Baathist government, which is at the forefront of not only defending itself and the resistance positions within the region, but globally, in the global South, internationally. Assad Syria is really fighting on behalf of everyone's independence and sovereignty.
Indeed. Since we have just so little time to cover so many topics, I need to move on now. And Jihad Markata, ask you if you agree with what one analyst has said, and this is based on the developments on the ground in particular, in what is going on with that very strategic town of Qusair. This analyst has said it's a rule of thumb in conflicts that whenever peace talks are announced, each side steps up the fighting so it can grab as much territory as possible before the ceasefire lines are drawn. Is that what is happening, especially regarding Qusair, and of course how the army throughout the past weeks now has made such gains over the insurgents?
I would like to say that, first of all, I totally disagree with the analysis of the gentleman with regards to Al-Qaeda and Qaeda groups, but I'll come back to that later. In response to your question, it is the Syrian government who has thrown a major offensive recently in order to take back areas that he has lost in the past, in preparation for the peace conference. And the problem is not really if he wants to, if the Syrian government takes Al-Qusair or does not take Al-Qusair. The problem is, can he take it, can they take it and hold it? And this is where I really have a problem with it, because right now the opposition does not have the kind of weapons that the Syrian government has. It doesn't have airplanes, it doesn't have tanks, it doesn't have the missiles and the Scud missiles of the Syrian army. Doesn't have anything, and yet it is holding. And also, it is not helped by a foreign party like an organized militia like Hezbollah. It has people from here and there and everywhere. The Syrian government needs to achieve something before sitting at the table, and that's the reason why I think they've been delaying their response, using various excuses as to whether or not they will attend the Geneva conference. I think The major problem of the Syrian government is to find an acceptable way to sit with the opposition. The opposition has no problem sitting with those people in the Syrian government that are not engaged in all those death and murder and torture and so on. And they also said, it's okay, you know, Farouk al-Sharaa, who is the current deputy prime minister, can he himself sit with us on the table together with some other people, but not the security services and not the people around the regime and President Bashar al-Assad. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I think it is really for the Syrian government to take a decision. Their problem is they can't take a decision before they make some achievements on the ground, as you can see right here.
So many different angles they introduced there that I can see you, Sukant Chandon, to have a reaction to Mr. Morkade. So go ahead.
Well, I think this it's really a false narrative to be putting out that the poor rebels, they're not rebels, they're death squads. Look at the type of activity these people are conducting on the ground in Syria. This is not a liberation movement. This is a counter-revolutionary movement. And our friend in Beirut, being in where he is in the capital of Lebanon, should understand very well, and I'm sure he knows in the back of his mind, but perhaps his political anchorage does not allow him to be as honest as perhaps he should be. But what is going on in Syria is actually a historical revenge act against the resistance of the region, and particularly
the revenge by the
Zionist white settler state and by its backers, Britain, France, and the United States, against the Lebanese resistance movement, Hezbollah, which defeated the Zionist state in an open war in July 2006. So this is the bigger picture of what's going on. And far from the poor rebels, the hapless poor rebels in Syria having no support whatsoever, it's all on record in the mainstream media. We have the intelligence services of particularly Britain, France, and the United States working with Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar especially in training people from Jordan and Turkey and from Libya and from all around the region in the Muslim world, feeding them into and Syria. And are we so naive as to think that the military intelligence services of NATO are not on the ground with the rebels? Well, of course they were. If the US ambassador can be welcomed with open arms and hugged by the so-called opposition movement in Syria at the beginning of the opposition protests, well, why wouldn't the intelligence services of the US, British, and French military establishments be there on the ground with the rebels in Syria? Of course they are. It would only be the most naive of naive people to think that they're not there. So really, this is the situation that we're faced with. And really, it's been a very wise move of the Syrian Baathist government in alliance with the Popular Front of Palestine General Command and Hezbollah to say that we will actually consider strategically opening up acts of resistance in the Golan. And it's been a cheap argument, the cheapest of cheap arguments by those who are supporting this NATO operation in Syria to say, well, look at the Syrians, they pretend to be anti-Zionist and anti-imperialist, but they've never done anything with Golan. Well, frankly, conducting a resistance operation in July 2006 and winning it was the greatest achievement, arguably, of the people of the region against their common enemy, which is Zionism and imperialism. And now they are calling the death. They're calling the death squad's bluff by saying we will open up resistance hostilities in Golan against the white settler Zionist state. And that's exactly what just took place.
Sure. Go ahead, Jihad Morkade.
Well, I have never heard such a description which is so false and incorrect of the situation. First of all, for 6 months, the opposition was not armed. So the people who were shooting at the opposition and who were manifesting in the streets and killing them was the Syrian government. So don't tell me that these were death squads. Later on, they had to arm themselves and respond to the attack of the Syrian government on them. And it was a very brutal reply. Second, the Syrian government never, ever, did anything about the Golan. In 2006, they were not fighting in the Golan. They were fighting by proxy, by the proxy of Hezbollah. It was Lebanon who got hit by Israel, while Syria was happy saying, we won the war. But in fact, in 2006, while Hezbollah was fighting Israel, the Syrian government was negotiating behind, under the table, with the Israeli government to sign a peace treaty with them. Now, about the threat in the Golan Heights, I don't think it is believable at all, because Syria knows that with its army stretched to the maximum, they cannot afford a war in the Golan, and they certainly cannot afford any resistance movement, because their eyes are on the north and not on Israel. This is good for talking, for just to have a little bit improve the morale of their troops, morale of their people, after being hit three times by Israel. Every time they get hit, we will respond, they said, in due course, in our own time, and so on. And now we responded strategically, because we are going to open the Golan Heights, the front on the Golan Heights. They're not going to do anything. Syria today never opened the Golan Heights when they were at the height of their power. They're going to open the Golan front when they are stretched and overstretched militarily.
I'd like to ask you, John Marcotti, your viewpoint on the fact that how shipments of arms is going to help and is the solution to this. I mean, we had the chief of staff of the so-called Free Syrian Army admit to the fact that they've received a shipment of, 35 tons of weapon from Saudi Arabia, asking the U.S. for 700 tons of ammunition each week over the next month. You really think that this is going to help the situation regarding the insurgents on the ground? I mean, do you think that Russia is going to sit back and let the insurgents actually overtake with this added ammunition, as it's now pouring in 35 tons of it from Saudi Arabia? Is that really a solution?
First of all, of course, you have to need you need a certain balance of power in the area, because the Syrian army has been supplied by Iran and Russia with sophisticated weapons, and the others have not been supplied with anything except light weapons coming from Saudi Arabia and Qatar. They don't have anti-aircraft batteries. They don't have anti-tank missiles. They have nothing. They have really light weapons. I think that you need to supply arms, and serious arms, in order to keep a certain balance of power on the ground. You cannot have one side being armed like a Syrian state with all sorts of weapons, and the other side fighting it with light weapons. And if you do not supply anything to the other side, you might as well tell President Bashar al-Assad and the Syrian regime, well, you know, you can go ahead and wipe out all these people.
Okay, Sukan Shandan, again, let me jump in here to cover today. This. Sukan Shandan, I'm looking at this, really, I'm counting two dual-track approaches to the situation. The latter, the consequence of the first one, and the first one is the diplomatic push, this Geneva conference announced by the United States and Russia. But at the same time, they want to aid the insurgents. And of course, some say they're already doing that. And then you have what President Assad has called continue fighting the terrorists and terrorism inside his country. At the same time, look at efforts for a political solution. First of all, the first dual-track approach, doesn't that go against each other? When they talk about the U.S. and, for example, Russia, in particular the U.S., they talk about this conference, but at the same time, aiding these insurgents, piling up money to them, it kind of goes against each other. At least that's the way it appears.
Absolutely, brother. I mean, it's a trap, frankly. The move of the NATO leading countries to some kind of political dialogue at the moment is an admission things are not going the way that they would like it, is an admission de facto by them that the Syrian Arab army is actually not being defeated, and actually now it's turning the tables and it's going on the offensive. It's an admission that they have jumped deep into bed by the most depraved death squads that you could ever find, that would make the Contras in Latin America blush by the type of activities that they're conducting, literally cannibalistic maniacs on the ground in Syria, which unfortunately our friend in Beirut is in alliance with. So it's an admission of all that, but it reminds me when I was in Tripoli in Libya three times during the NATO bombing of that country. And I'm hoping our friend in Beirut is not an advocate like some of the Libyans were, like some of the Syrians are, of trying to get the former colonizers to come and bomb yourself into some false notion of freedom. I'm really hoping that that's not the case. But it reminds me in Libya, because during the latter period of the summer 2011, NATO was in disarray, NATO was collapsing, the Libyan death squads were absolutely going nowhere and were retreating under the offensive of the Jamhuriya army. But it was exactly at that time that the NATO countries made a massive military push and then overthrew Tripoli by massive force of arms. So really, any time that our side of the global south pushes our position and our resistance positions, then perhaps imperialism will back off slightly, but they'll only take one step back in order to try at least to take two steps forward against us. And what I would like to actually, just as the last point in this contribution, what I'd like to really convey to our guest in Beirut is that if you are advocating the arming of illegal arming of death squads in a sovereign country of the global south, then that is a very dangerous path to set yourself upon. And really, I would ask all our viewers to really understand the danger of that, that if we accept that, then we can kiss sovereignty and independence of our countries goodbye, goodbye. But actually, the Russians and the Chinese and those backing up the Ba'athist Syrian government are absolutely correct to defend the most fundamental, important point of sovereignty of the global south, which is to say that we will not tolerate and will draw a red line against any attempted regime change against any resistant country of the global south.
Killing its people and destroying its own cities?
Well, hold that thought, John Barkhadeh. Hold your question. Sukhan Sharan, hold your thought. Quickly, we're going to take a timeout. Listen to some viewer comments as posted on our Facebook page.
If that so-called Free Syrian Army are really fighting for the people of Syria, they wouldn't be getting the war supplies from Israel and America and their allies. Most of these terrorists are not from Syria itself. They are being sent over to Syria from other countries to burn Syria and to burn the unity of Muslims.
Comment by one of our viewers, which and we had so many of them for this topic. Jad Morakata, some good points made there, I believe. Do you care to expand on that and give a reaction? Jad Morakata.
Yeah.
The viewer comments, call the Free Syrian Army, are they really fighting for the people of Syria? They're getting the war supplies from Israel and America and their allies. Most of the terrorists are not from Syria itself, being sent over from other countries to burn Syria and to burn the unity of Muslims.
So excuse me, I mean, where do you expect them to get their weapons from? From Russia and China? Russia and China have taken sides and they are arming the regime.
So
where are they supposed to get their weapons from?
Well, let me get an idea from you then.
Available.
Do you think then when John Kerry comes out in Jordan and says it needs a political settlement, that's why people last year went to Geneva, they suggested to have this political settlement. Do you believe the United States when it says that?
The United States has been very clear all along. First, they did not want to arm seriously the Free Syrian Army because they did not want that these weapons to get into the hands of some of the more extremist groups. They have come to the conclusion that without arming the opposition or the Free Syrian Army, the regime of, while Russia and China, Russia more particularly, is arming the Syrian regime, it's become a one-sided fight. While as both Russia and the United States, since last year, and contrary to what the gentleman in London said, he said, now the United States has come around. Not at all. Secretary Clinton was in the Geneva conference last year in June, and she agreed with the Russian, Mr. Lavrov, that they should have a conference between the two sides. That was a year ago, and then at the time, the Syrian army has not made major advances.
I'm sorry, so I just got to jump in here because unfortunately we're fresh out of time. Let me thank our guest, political commentator Sukhan Shandan, talking to us from London. Thank you, Sukhan. Middle East affairs expert Jad Morakhadeh spoke to us from Beirut. Thank you very much.
Also, thank you, the viewer, for watching another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Batapa and the entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.